Welcome to the Long COVID podcast with me, Jackie Baxter. I am really excited to bring you today's episode. Please do check out the links in the show notes where you can find the podcast website, social media and support group, as well as a link to buy me a coffee if you are able. You should not rely on any medical information contained in this podcast and related materials in making medical, health-related or other decisions. Please do consult a doctor or other health professional. I love to hear from you. If you've got any suggestions or feedback or just want to say hey, then please do get in touch. I really hope you enjoy this episode, so here we go. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Long COVID podcast. I am super excited today to be joined by Dr. Marco Leitzke, and we are going to be talking about the nicotine test and how this might be helpful with long COVID and what it actually means. So a very warm welcome to the podcast today.
Hello.
So, yeah, thank you so much for joining me today. Would you be able to just say a little bit more about yourself and what it is that you do?
Basically, I'm a normal consultant working in a hospital dealing with intensive care and narcotics, actually. And my research field is basically septicemia, which means critically ill patients on ICU wards. And yes, I came along the specialty of acute COVID infections, and we saw along the pandemic phases terrible and horrible scenes and very critically ill patients. And that's how I came across researching for acute COVID. And by the way, I found out that there are very, very much similarities, acute COVID and septicemia or sepsis.
So you were seeing acute COVID in your day to day?
Like any ICU worker did.
Yes. So what brought you from there into the long COVID world?
The clinical picture is quite comparable from critically or severe causes of COVID-19 with ventilation, with organ damage, with fatality in lots of cases. And yes, the time before SARS-CoV-2, I was researching for septicemia or critically ill situations, and I came across nicotinic acetylcholine receptors, which is my specialty. And yes, the link was quite, was not so far to go this step.
So you were seeing the sort of commonalities between the two?
Yes, yes.
So I'm really excited to kind of talk all about what you've been doing. But before we do that, are you able to kind of talk a little bit about what is nicotine? What are these receptors that you just mentioned? What does that actually sort of mean in terms of the body?
I start with the receptors. Our autonomic nervous system, especially the vagal or recovery part, we have a sympathicus and we have a vagus fraction. And the vagus fraction is mainly operated by acetylcholine receptors, and we have muscarinic receptors and nicotinic receptors. They are called that because the one fraction reacts to muscarine, which is a poison of several animals, I guess. And the other fraction is called the nicotinic receptors, and it's called that way because it reacts to nicotine, and nicotine is a very strong agonist or substance working very strong to this receptors. And especially these nicotinic receptors have a special meaning, and nicotine is actually a so-called alkaloid. This means substance which is produced by plants, actually to protect them from insects. And The problem of nicotine is that it has gotten a very bad reputation due to smoking. And I want to make clear that nicotine and smoking are two very different things. So if you smoke a cigarette, you inhale about 8,000 poisons, which are all prone to make you very sick. And especially the substance nicotine, which is the main substance, of course, on every smoking variant, cigarettes or pipes. The only problem of nicotine is that it makes addictive. And that's the reason why so much people inhale 8,000 poisons to get satisfied from the addiction. But the way we applicate nicotine, that means transdermal with patches, is proven to be not addictive. And for that reason, I think that this alkaloid is a very, very potential medical substance, which is has been prevented from use for years and years. Actually, we could have been far better developed procedures to use this substance just because of the bad reputation. We just avoid to use nicotine, which is a pity.
Yeah, and that is interesting because, as you say, most people will associate nicotine with cigarettes and therefore with bad health, with addiction, with, things that we don't really want for our health. So it's really interesting that actually nicotine itself doesn't have to be associated with that. You said that nicotine in the way that you're using it isn't addictive. Do you know why? Why it's not addictive in that form?
I try to explain it. If you inhale from a cigarette, the substances you inhale getting through your lungs in the so-called pulmonal vessels, which means that they are within 6 up to 10 seconds up to your brain, which releases a lot of dopamine in your vagal ventral tegmental area and the nucleus accumbens, which are two areas which are addiction related, especially to dopamine release. And if you apply the substance via the skin, it went through your venous system, not the pulmonary vessels, but the venous system. The rise within the blood, the concentration within blood arises very slowly, which gives the body the chance first to, for instance, secrete so-called monoamino oxidases, which are substances to reduce dopamine, for instance, and which releases dopamine very, very slowly, which is not able to provoke addictiveness. That's why patches are used to prevent smoking. They are actually fighters against addiction.
Right, so it's to do with the slower release.
Yes. And the other route, the route is especially is if you inhale something, it is up to your brain and up to your arterial blood flow within seconds. And if you give it via a transdermal pathway, it takes up to 1 minute. So that's the great difference. And it goes not directly to your brain, but via the liver. That means liver means always it is catabolized. So it's a completely different kind of given. So you can compare it with intravenous injection and a pestle.
Fascinating. And like the dosage, for want of a better word, how does the dosage of the patch compare to smoking a couple of cigarettes, for example?
The special thing is that if you look around, you will find only an extreme small minority among LC or long COVID patients, which are smokers. So they are all nicotine naive, the patients which are suffering. So that the dosage you cannot compare to smoking cigarettes, or you even cannot compare one long COVID patient with the other, because some are very sensitive to any substance and the others can do without problems greater dosages. So my advice for now is that we should use the smallest dosages on nicotine patches which are available, which is actually about 7 or 7.5 milligrams per 24 hours. And these should be divided not by cutting, but by covering. This is of importance because there's a Gehl matrix, which is providing the slow release of the substance. And if you cut the patch, you will destroy the matrix. And so you don't have ability to control the dosage per time. So I actually advise to use first line a quarter or a half of the lowest dosage. That means 1.75 or 3.5 milligrams per 24 hours, and this to become habituated for 3 up to 5 days, and then to go up. So the question I am asked very often is, should I enlarge the doses? I don't feel a real improvement. And my opinion is that it's rather a question of time than a question of dosage. So you should avoid to. And I know the feeling of a lot of people which are suffering for years and years and years, and any expert is helplessly looking and say, I can't help you. So they want to get rid of the problem as soon as possible, but it's more a long-term run than a sprint. For that reason, I think you should avoid overdosage because nicotine is a very, very effective substance, and overdosage doesn't feel right or very comfortable. For that reason, I think it's better to use the patches at the 7 milligram in brackets, up to 40 milligram in some cases for a longer time than to use it for a shorter time with up to 21 milligrams. This is not advisable.
Yeah, I mean that totally makes sense. I know we see that with all sorts of things. You know, everybody is different as a starting point.
I want to say you must imagine that your body has 10 billion cells, around 10 billion cells, and this is proven. Any cell, each cell has such acetylcholine receptors, and up to 12,000 per cell. That means 12,000 receptors per 10 billion cells means any of these receptors could be blocked. So you can imagine if you take this substance for one day or well, what time could have been necessary to get rid of the whole problem. So try to consider a rather long time for getting rid of the problem. But I'm quite convinced that this is the approach which will solve the problem. This is because Monsieur Changeux from the Sorbonne in Paris, which is the worldwide most accepted acetylcholine receptor pope, if one wants to call it like that. And he found out that there is a similarity in the RNA sequence of the spike protein. The similarity is in comparison to cholinergic poisons, which are cobra toxin or Bungaro toxin, for instance. So these poisons are, due to their affinity to the receptors, very effective poisons. And this similarity mimics the blocking effects of these poisons. So that's the theory behind it. And because nicotine is known as a very, for its very high affinity to these receptors, my hypothesis was that it was possible that nicotine could compete with a virus for the binding site of the receptors. And if you hear competition means it's not a 0-1 relationship, but it's more likely a question of time. But nicotine has a 30-fold higher affinity compared to acetylcholine to these receptors. So the possibility to dislodge the virus protein from the receptors is quite high. That's the reason for this theory or this hypothesis. And if we look around, I mean, for now, We have, I don't know how much people are using the patches, but it's worldwide, then thousands, really a lot of people, which basically shows how great the problem is to mankind at the moment. And we see a lot of improvements, not straight ahead, as we see people with these strong effects, and we see people with non-effects. But in the majority, a lot of people feel improvements. It's kind of undulating in some cases. But as I said, we have 10 billion cells, and we have per cell a huge amount of receptors. So time is the matter, I think.
Yeah, I mean that does make sense that it will take time. I mean that's the same with everything in life, isn't it, generally? But certainly with everything that people are talking about with long COVID, it's kind of that slow burn of improvement, whatever it is that someone tries, whether it's nicotine or breathing, which is my wheelhouse, or anything else that they try, you notice that improvement a little bit, and then you get a dip. But then, that improvement, so it does take time. So you're talking about the receptors and the nicotine competing with the virus for these receptors. So this is playing into the viral persistence theory, is it? That there's virus and stuff still in the body and that this is going to help to clear that. Is that the theory?
Yes, actually, you must imagine that a virus is actually nothing more but an RNA or DNA stripe. A virus doesn't have any life signs, no friends or enemies. A virus is just an RNA stripe. And in the way of long COVID, that's the reason why the long COVID people aren't high infectious or critically ill, and often not even recognizable as acute ill persons, which makes the problem even larger. Because within the receptors, the virus does nothing but block the receptors. It doesn't make any chemical reaction or any biological impact. It just blocks the receptors. The problem is that any cell of your body is regulated by these receptors. So if for instance, the thrombocytes are regulated, the erythrocytes are regulated, all your nerve cells are regulated by these receptors. Just imagine a boat with a company of 10 billion sailors. It's of extreme importance that each of the sailors knows what's going on at the moment. So the effectiveness of your body is extremely dependent of the togetherness of all the cells that makes our body working. And if only a little fraction, let's say 10% or 20%, is out of the information, out of the whole body's togetherness, your body goes in a very, very strange way wrong. And because any receptor can be blocked, this means the wide symptomatology of the long COVID. That's why anybody said, but we have perfusion problems, or we have chest problems, we have fatigue problems, we have nerve problems, we have any specialist says, could be antibodies. Yes, we have antibodies because the B lymphocytes are innervated by acetylcholine receptors, by nicotinic acetylcholine receptors, which control their production of antibodies, even autoantibodies. So anything in connection to long COVID could be explained by this receptor hypothesis. That's the reason why I think it's very worth to go on, especially for the fact that the nicotine patches are very affordable compared to hyperbaric oxygenation, to whatever. I mean, we have 75 million people suffering worldwide. It was half a year ago. I don't think it's more right now. How should this problem be solved with hyperbaric chambers to all the people, or plasmapheresis, which is extremely expensive and doesn't bring anything more than 3 or 5 days better improvement? So my opinion is it's very worth to look, even if it's just with a penetration of 30% effectiveness. It's very worth to go that way and to try it.
We'll be right back. I'm interrupting myself for a second to tell you about long COVID breathing. The fabulous Vicky Jones and I have teamed up to bring you long COVID breathing. We are both passionate about sharing our expertise and experience of the breath and how incredibly helpful that can be with long COVID. We've worked together to develop a course that is specifically tailored to those with long COVID. It's a 6-week course with 12 sessions, all delivered online. The community feel and learning that we're all sharing is such a joy. To find out more information and to sign up for our courses, workshops and other shorter sessions, please check out the link below, longcovidbreathing.com, or email longcovidbreathing@gmail.com to start your breathing journey with us. Yeah, interesting. And I mean, what you just said at the end, you know, when you are ill and you've been ill for a long time and you have all of these symptoms and you can't do anything in your life that you want to do, and you don't really see any way of getting better, you start to look outside the box. And, you know, that's when people will start thinking, well, my doctor can't help me. Even if you find a doctor that is, you know, empathetic, the GPs aren't mostly very good at actually finding anything that helps because it's not their specialty. So people are kind of going and finding other things. I mean, that's what I did, and that was how I recovered. But, you know, it's like if you can find something that helps a little bit, you know, if you can get 1%, if you can get 10%, then maybe that means you can then find something else that will give you another 10%. So I think, you know, that's why it's really worth looking at things that help a bit, because especially if they are things that already exist. And as you say, you know, nicotine patches are relatively affordable and available literally everywhere. Like you can walk into like what a supermarket or a chemist and get one and try it out. And if it helps, great. And if it doesn't, then okay. So I suppose what the next question would be is this safe for anybody to try? Or are there any risks or any kind of guidelines that you would suggest?
I've been dealing with the substance now for quite a long time, especially in relationship to long COVID. I didn't expect this huge tsunami-like wave of response. And what I can say, first of all, the most used misbelief to nicotine is that it's vasoconstrictive. That means it reduces your perfusion. This is not right. This is wrong. It's the opposite, because nicotine enhances the intracellular nitrogen oxygen concentration within the endothelial cells, which means nitrogen oxygen is responsible for vasodilatation. It's of importance. That means, official speaking, is that nicotine is, I guess it was in 2013 that the NIH, which means the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence from the United Kingdom, said that the transdermal use of nicotine over a time for 5 years without any health risk. So this is important to know. So this is a major national health institution stated by the experience of millions of people. So I think this is something which could be seen as fact. The other thing is nicotine is often said to be cancerogenic, or this is reduced to the fact that nicotine is not a cancerogen first, but it may have co-cancerogenic action. So that means if you are exposed to a cancerogenic substance, nicotine might be able to enlarge this effect, this cancerogenic effect. This is still not proven, but this is the way people or the scientific scene is trying to reduce something which has proclaimed for years and years. I just don't want to say nicotine is just like chewing gum. No, of course not. But I think if you are in a situation. I mean, we have ME/CFS patients which are suffering from 20, 35 years and even longer, and are housebound for this time. So one must consider which intervention might make me. We have considerations which are saying a long-term suffering from long COVID or ME/CFS in terms of the life quality harder than cancer. So we must get one step aside and think it over, even if there was a little proportion or a little possibility that nicotine might have some bad effects, even if I didn't say it has, but even if it had, one must think if it was an effective substance against ME/CFS, I would at least consider if this substance is worth to try, especially if I know I don't use it for years right now, but for, I don't know, 4 up to 5 weeks, or I saw people with up to 6 months. This is a question which has to be solved within the next half or year. I don't know. But yes, the substance could even advised, not by me, but by official institutions, to be usable for patients with stable angina pectoris. So this is a point. So if somebody is suffering from cardiac circulatory disease, it could be used by people for other reasons. So especially if you are a smoker and you want to cessate, or but if you are suffering as well from cardiac disease, you can use it very safely because it doesn't harm or doesn't enlarge the problem of your heart. It's always advisable to go together with your practitioner, of course, not to use it by yourself to do any hazard to yourself. But this is the range we can imagine to use this substance, especially in this special application for transdermal.
Right, interesting. So you've been working with people, and people, as you say, worldwide have been trying this out, and presumably reporting back to it. Is there any research into this, or is it all anecdotal at the moment?
At the moment, all anecdotal. It has, first of all, with a bad re to do with a bad reputation of nicotine. I think a lot of scientists and doctors are avoiding to jump on a train which possibly rides the wrong direction. So this is kind of holding back development, which could be very, very useful to a lot of people and to a lot of healthcare systems, especially because it's not only healthcare systems but economic systems. If you think that a lot of skilled workers are out of work, which have to go to any rehab scenery. But I am contacted by a lot of practitioners, especially, or some specialists as well, which are asking me for the theory, which are asking me for the hypothesis, and which are using it to their patients, which are advising it to their patients. And I know about a lot of special clinics within Germany, Charité, for instance, in Berlin, or there's a special clinic in Berchtesgaden, which are using patches. Because the thing is, wherever you go to what specialist ever, nobody has a good explanation for the complexity of long COVID. So nobody. So they are actually seeking for any solution. So that's the reason why they do use patches as well. So I do all I can, and I'm in contact with a lot of scientists here in my hometown in Leipzig, in other cities and towns as well in Germany. And we are trying our best to get a randomized controlled trial on the way. But the hurdles are very, very high, and not only one hurdle, but tens and thousands. So it's a question of money, of course. It's a question of ethic committees, because nicotine is not medical devices law, but medical medications law, which is quite different concerning the aspect of letting something happen and allow it to do things. Yes, so we have a lot of things are still to do, but what we see right now is that it's going to come. So I'm sure that within the next 1, 2, 3 years, a lot of people would have tried, and we will gain a lot of experience. And I think this study approach is somehow attractive because we are gaining experience. This is only possible with a substance which is quite secure, of course. So I don't want to use any chemotherapeutic or any hard substance to be used or studied that way. But this patient-led science provides us a lot of experience within a very, very short time. So if we do studies by a study protocol, which is obligate, so you will always go one point to the next, and the speed of experience is very, very slow. And if we see long COVID right now, we have a lot of people, and they haven't got the time until we have developed a solution within the next 20 or 50 years. In that special case, I think this is very worth to support this way of experience making.
I think like everyone's definition of safe is different, and you can do your research into something like nicotine and you can find out that it is largely safe. It may have very, very small risks in certain areas that we're not quite sure about, but on the whole, it seems to be a relatively safe thing to try. And actually, if we think about it, people are doing all sorts of other things, taking lots of different supplements with no guidance, completely unregulated. And I suppose if you were going to compare the two, that's not particularly safe either.
Up to 20, 30 per day. Anything. Creatine, natokinase, everything. I think it's crazy. It's really crazy.
So, yeah, I suppose that comes back to what you were saying about nicotine having this reputation. But when you look into it, you realize maybe that it is not deserving of that reputation and maybe could be very useful.
I want to make one point for anybody who is about to try the nicotine patch. One must prepare to in the first few days to feel not an improvement but getting worse and worsening, because the set free virus particles are evoking kind of infection-like situation, because viruses are set free from a receptor binding where they are actually trapped. So to break at that point means you will never know how it was if the virus is erased by your immune system, which takes actually your immune system is prepared for it, like because it had always contact to the virus or the vaccine as well. This is even an explanation for the post-vaccine syndrome, because the epitope on the vaccine, which makes your immune system ready to combat the virus, is the same as the spike protein. So the spike protein-like sequence could couple as well to these receptors and could make the same issue or issues as long COVID does. So be prepared for a infection-like or post-vaccination situation, which makes you feel worse, which is in terms of long COVID horrible, because you are already bad and you should expect to become worse. But that's worth it, because afterwards, if your immune system did recognize that there is an enemy which has been contacted before, it is quite good able to erase this problem. I'm often asked, what about Paxlovid or any other antiviral substance? I'm not a fan of this because actually your immune system is able to do so. If you're reducing by antiviral or binders or whatever, you make the discoverability of the spike protein or the virus by your immune system, you compromise this so that the reaction of your immune system could be lower and not that fast as it could be. And on the other hand, I mean, Paxlovid is not chewing gum as well. I mean, this is a very, very strong substance which does not only benefit, but it does harm to your body as well. So even, or some people are asking if they should take antibiotics. No, they should not take antibiotics. I think anybody must be aware that what you put into your body, anything you ingest besides the expected effect, if it has an effect, side effects, and any substance you add has some side effects more. It's not to expect that you are doing for the good if you are taking 20 substances. It shows the disparity of the people, but it's the wrong direction, I guess. And therefore, I actually say people, because they need any string to hold on to feel secure. And I don't want to say put off all the substances you've taken the last few years, because it's a kind of safety for them. So, but I advise, do not anything new to the usage of nicotine. Anything you used before, you can do it further, except acetylcholine esterase inhibitors, especially methinone. This is quite a dangerous thing, but anything you used before, you can use further, especially under the imagination. If you see any medication, and in this point, one can compare it with smoking. Any medication, it should be clear that even smokers did use it before. So if you use nicotine with it, without the 8,000 toxins added, it could not be a real danger, whatever you do.
Yeah, well, I'm super excited to see where this goes. I hope you do manage to get some research into this because I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah, I hope as well. But the main message is, I get n not any coin for doing this. I do it just not even by any producer from negative patches. Also, I think we should think twice the very bad reputation of nicotine, because the possibilities of this substance, and we speak about chronic headache, we speak about depression. There are studies about this. We speak about Alzheimer's disease. We speak about chronic infectious, chronic inflammatory bowel disease. There are so many instances which are referable to a blocked or to a compromised cholinergic systems, maybe due to viruses, or maybe due just a form of any balance disorder between the two branches of the autonomic nervous system. So I think we should consider this substance for the future as a real important therapeutic substance. That's something which should be developed, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like it's definitely worth exploring for sure. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It has been really exciting diving into this and hearing all of your experience and all of the kind of theory behind it and stuff as well. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. I thank you.
Thank you so much to all of my guests and to you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it or at least found it useful. The Long COVID podcast is entirely self-produced and self-funded. I'm doing all of this myself. If you're able to, please go to buymeacoffee.com/longcovidpod to help me cover the costs of hosting the podcast. Please look out for the next episode of the Long COVID podcast. It's available on all the usual podcast hosting things. And do get in touch and